Part 4 of Hollywood, Its Morals and Manners. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Chuck Williamson. Hollywood, Its Morals and Manners by Theodore Dreiser. Part 4. The Extras Fight to Exist. There is still another aspect of the situation of the beginner. We will say that you, as an aspirant, or just a beginner, or you may have reached the bit part stage, or you are anything short of one of those comparatively comfortable successes who can command a contract, or at least that respect and hence courtesy which is all but the equivalent of one. You are now called by an agent or some certain casting director who says that you are to be at his office at a certain hour on such and such a day in order that a certain director who is about to screen a certain picture may see you. He may have a small part for you, he thinks. If you are not working, and 9 times out of 10, whatever your ability, you are not, you spend several hours preceding this fatal interview, dressing for the occasion. For although you have no idea as to how the interview may result, it may mean a week or a month's work as easily, no, not quite, as it might mean a day or two or three. No person in pictures can ever tell, and no one connected with the official side of the business would be willing to tell you if he knew. It would merely make for bad feeling if anything went wrong with the program, or so they say. But in this business, looks count for so much, and so, if you are a woman or a girl, you dress and dress and dress. Always one must come walking in, as though fresh out of a bandbox, and with that seraphic smile that is supposed to accompany youth and beauty, and to indicate its carefree and idyllic mood. Allons! Sir Director and his agent are there. So are many other aspirants, some of them dressed as well, possibly, if not better, than are you. You are not only given the once, but the several times over. And your stills, which you have brought also, for without those same precious records of where and with whom you have worked, nothing is doing. Very good. After examining these and you, and deciding that all are satisfactory, you can then wait a while, for there are others. And their stills and their seraphic smiles may prove more satisfactory than are yours. So you wait, and you go, and they say they will call you when they have definitely decided whether they want you or not. No pay for this. Time and car fare and dressing and makeup at your own expense. At 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 of this, or the next, or the next, or the next day, you may be called, assuming that you have finally been fixed upon as the one. Rate, if you insist upon it, and they have not been able in the meantime to find anyone who will work for less, 10 or 12.50 or 15 a day. It all depends upon how really fascinating they have found your type to be. And you are to report, says the voice, usually that of a lordly assistant who salutes you familiarly by your first name, at such and such a place, miles and miles out of town, maybe, for it may as well be on location as in some one of the 58 or more studios, and not necessarily on a car line either. And at 8:30 or 9, dressed as planned, you, possibly to furnish the costume and ready to work. Yet at the hour at which you are called, evening or morning, it may be too late to obtain the one certain costume upon which you had fixed as ideal for the purpose from the costumer who rents things to you for the most you can afford. Your costumer may be closed for the night at the time your message comes, or, it being morning, he or she may not be open as yet, and you have to appear on duty at 9. That is your funeral. Rout the costumer out of bed at 11 at night, or before 7 in the morning, and see what you can do. It is your business to think in advance, and to anticipate possibilities. He may do you a special favor and deliver the costume to you at the lot or location. If that can be done, well and good. If not, not. You shouldn't be attempting to enter this business on a shoestring anyhow. Get some money or some support from somewhere. But look the part, or back you go. They have no hesitation in sending you back unless you look exactly right. And if, by any means, you get the reputation of not looking ideal for all of your parts, you will soon get no calls anyhow. There are too many who can come looking perfection itself for them to bother with one who does not. Granted, it shall be as they say, and is. Next morning comes. Now it may be gray, or it may be raining, or it may be as clear as crystal, as it must be in this case. Worse luck, if any work is to be done. Yet no work, no pay, even though you travel to location, and there find that for some one reason or another, no work is to be done. For until you have grown to such a stature artistically that they must have you, willy-nilly, and no one else will do, they will not pay you for a workless day. Pay for nearly everyone else connected with the work, especially the carpenters, electricians, etc., for they belong to a union and can call a strike or otherwise enforce their demands. But the artist of the aspirant stage? Never. That would be cutting it a little thick, even though she were the very spirit of the scene in question, as she often is. Ordinary trade decency might suggest, you would think, some limited form of reward in such cases, but not in the moving picture world. Aren't there high-salaried directors and stars and stockholders and bankers to be paid? And don't they always come first? They do. Besides, it is so easy to get away with this type of graft in the case of the artist, and so it continues to be done. Yet, in the face of this, few or no telephone calls in time to stop all this useless effort on the part of those who are not to be paid. It may be disappointingly gray, or raining even, but unless the artist calls upon and inquires, she is not likely to find out what is to be done, and not then always. A second assistant something has to arrive from somewhere as a rule and confer first with this, that, and the other authority before it can be definitely stated what is to be done by anyone. And by then, it may be 9 or 10 even, and the various artists assembled from a score or more of directions, and long ones at that. Then they will be told. It is an innately courteous world, this. If nothing is to be done, The assistant it is who is told to get rid of those mutts the easiest way you can, but to stall 'em, if possible, and hold 'em until tomorrow, or the next day, or the next day. In short, as long as anyone will stand for it, and without pay, of course. So you may track back in the rain or the gray weather, unless you have a car, which all movie aspirants should have, of course, and wait until you hear from them. They will let you know whether you are to work tomorrow or not. But assuming you to be a person of force and not easily to be put upon, you might, without tact at first, resent all this and, reaching your room, proceed to call up the corporation in order to know whether you are to be paid for your time or not. If so, you are likely to hear something.
Where do you get that stuff? Certainly not! We don't hold anybody at 15 a day. Who do you think you are anyway? No work, no pay. That's the rule on this lot.
This from the advised assistant, who has been calling you by your first name. So then comes the test. You can take it or leave it. Either you say very sharply, "Very good, then I can't come tomorrow." And this after all your wasted time and effort. Or you will swallow this sharp rebuff, as many do, and that before they are long in the business, and say as sweetly as you can that you didn't understand it that way, and that you are not accustomed to be held without pay. But if that is the rule... It depends upon your disposition, your means, your illusions in regard to this realm, your intense desire to succeed, come what may. And $15, even 3 days off, and in the face of all this trouble, may be of extreme importance to you at this time. But should you decide to hold your ground, and you have made an extraordinary impression, are just the type and all that, it is entirely possible that you may be carried on salary until the work is done. There are such cases. Far more likely, the final word will be, "We can't do that." And there it will end. Except for this not infrequent addenda, that thereafter, in the case of that particular lot, or casting director, or agent, you may be looked upon as a troublemaker, and one who had best be kept off the lot in the future. You won't troop. You don't get the right slant on the game. For the present day, manufacturers of movies, as you will soon discover, dislike those who make the least trouble intensely, and will have none of them. There are too many crazy to get into the game for them to bother. They really count in these days on the large number, as well as the inexperience and financial helplessness of those who try to enter upon this work to reduce their own expenses. And they do so reduce expenses. Yet, even if you accept the condition of no work, no pay, it does not mean that you will work so very much, or that you will really be liked any the better, or employed oftener at any one particular studio because of that. On the contrary, and as strange as it may seem, another one of the interesting paradoxes of living, they really prefer those who can and do triumph over them, who beat them down or go elsewhere, and who somehow, by some freak of chance, eventually return with a standing and a pull with the public, and so compel them to pay whatever they ask. It is to scream, ain't it? End of part 4. End of Hollywood, Its Morals and Manners by Theodore Dreiser. Recorded by Chuck Williamson, 2012, Columbus, Ohio.